Six.
Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Connor Oberst.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to a brand new series of The First Time here on BBC Six Music and BBC Sounds. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments that made them who they are today.
I know that it is freezing, but I think we have to walk. Waving at the taxis, they keep turning their lights off. But Julie knows a party at some actor's West Side loft. Supplies are endless in the evening, by the morning they'll be gone. When everything is lonely, I can be my own best friend. I get a coffee and the paper, have my own conversations. With the sidewalk and the pigeons and my window reflection. The mask I polish in the evening, by the morning looks like shit. I know you have a heavy heart, I can feel it when we kiss. So many men stronger than me have thrown their backs out trying to lift it. But me, I'm not a gamble, you can count on me to split. The love I sell you in the evening, by the morning won't exist. You're looking skinny like a model, with your eyes all painted black. You just keep going to the bathroom, always say you'll be right back. It takes one to know one, kid, I think you got it bad. But what's so easy in the evening, by the morning such a drag. I got a flask inside my pocket, we can share it on the train. And if you promise to stay conscious, I will try and do the same. Well, we might die from medication, but we sure killed all the pain. But what was normal in the evening, by the morning seems insane. And I'm not sure what the trouble was that started all of this. The reasons all have run away, but the feeling never did. It's not something I would recommend, but it is one way to live. What is simple in the moonlight, by the morning never is. It was so simple in the moonlight, now it's so complicated. It was so simple in the moonlight, so simple in the moonlight, so simple in the moonlight.
Today's guest is a singer and songwriter who occupies a special place in the heart of alternative music fans, and with his emotionally vivid and confessional songs, helped take US indie music in a more sensitive, lo-fi direction in the late 90s. He's the voice of the hugely loved indie folk outfit Bright Eyes, as well as The Faint, Monsters of Folk, and alongside Phoebe Bridges, Better Oblivion Community Centre. I'm very happy to welcome to the first time Connor Oberst. In the show, we talk about Connor's musical upbringing and his earliest releases. His first album, Water, came out in 1993 when he was just 14, and how his home city of Omaha, Nebraska, influenced his music and his earliest gigging experiences. We cover the first Bright Eyes album, a collection of songs written and recorded 95 to 97, and the creation of their 2005 breakthrough release, I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning. And you just heard the song Lure from that record. And we talk about his passion for the Wu-Tang Clan, The Cure, The Felice Brothers and The Replacements, as well as the story behind perhaps his best loved song, the wonderful First Day of My Life. But I started by asking Connor, as I do with all my guests, when was he first aware of music? And by the way, Connor had literally just woken up when we did this interview.
My father was a musician, like amateur musician. Well, actually, maybe amateur is the wrong word because he did like make some money off of it, but it was like his side job. So he worked for Mutual of Omaha, which is like the big insurance company here. And on the weekends, he would play with his band. This is like in the 80s, you know, and they would just do covers of like whatever the thing that was happening at the time. He was kind of like the utility guy of the band, so he played like saxophone, guitar, keyboard, sang harmonies, blah 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 blah, but he wasn't like the front guy of the band. He just like did whatever was needed to play whatever the new like Hall and Oates or like Men at Work or whatever was neat, you know.
Nice.
There's doing a lot of like Man Eater, you know. He's like, he's doing like the sax solo from like Man Eater and stuff like that. My family, we definitely were not like poor, but we also were not rich. We were like pretty squarely like middle class, like Midwestern family. So it actually helped. My mom was a teacher and eventually a principal, but whatever. My parents didn't make a lot of money. And so it was just a way to like supplement the money that they had. And they had three kids and we were all brats and we all wanted stuff. So they did the best they could with what they had. But consequently, because of that, we had guitars and we had like a little PA and we had like musical equipment in my basement. And my oldest brother, Maddie, like RIP, but he like, he was 7 years older than me or whatever. I would like watch his band's practice in my basement, and I got to experience a lot of music at a really young age. And my, I mean, to make a long story long, but no, like, my mom, you know, my mom and dad were very much like Jackson Browne, like Joni Mitchell, whatever, Bob Dylan, like 60s, 70s, folky stuff. And then my brother was like a child of like the 80s, like, you know, quote unquote alternative. So it was like, it was The Cure and The Smiths and The Replacements. And like, I think that those two components make up what my music sounds like in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah. From the very start, you couldn't escape it. Like, if you got kit and equipment in the basement, you got older brothers, like two older brothers playing your stuff, you're doomed, dude. You're going to be a musician. You can't escape it. It was always going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of such a freak, like, kid. Like, I started making records when I was, like, 12 years old. So it was like a novelty act, you know what I mean? It was like a circus act. So I remember them, not necessarily just my brothers, but also, like, my older friends who eventually evolved into, like, we started our own label, Saddle Creek, like, back in the day. But I was always kind of like the freaky little kid that's like, put Connor in front of the audience. Like, everyone loves Connor. Like, he's a crazy freak child. That was kind of how, I guess, it started happening, I suppose, in a way.
You mentioned The Cure, and I know that Standing on a Beach is a bit of a big record for you. Tell me about first falling in love with The Cure, and why do you love them so much?
Well, I always wanted to understand slash love, like, everything that my oldest brother, Matty, that he liked. And he loved The Cure. He loved The Smiths. He loved R.E.M. He loved The Clash. He loved Soul Asylum. He loved tons of bands. But I do remember he lived in the attic of our house. So we had this kind of little house, but it was tall. And the very top of the house, the literal attic, was his bedroom. To me, that was, like, always, like...
Well, like a hallowed place.
Exactly. Because you walk up the stairs, and, you know, you're talking to your mom and dad, and you're talking to, you know, you're just, like, dealing with everything. And then you get up at the top of the stairs, and then all of a sudden, all his walls were adorned with music memorabilia, and just, I was a scared little kid, and I was terrified to, like, sleep by myself. I could come up there and I would sleep like, I mean, literally like a dog at the foot of his bed. And he was always so kind to me, and he showed me a lot of music. I mean, between him and my dad, like, I mean, you can probably tell by my music, but no, I've never had any kind of musical education of any importance. But they both were musicians, and so they showed me how to play guitar. And I've told people this in the past, but it's like, it's the dead honest truth, which is, I think the first three songs I learned how to play on guitar were Blowing in the Wind, Here Comes a Regular by The Replacements, and Closer to Fine by the Indigo Girls.
Take my life less seriously. It's only life after all. Yeah. Well, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable, and lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shores. I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the fountains. There's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. See a B-grade movie. He graded my performance. He said he could see through me. I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Got my paper and I was free. And I went to the doctor. I went
to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. Yeah. Closer I am to find. Yeah. I stopped by the bar at 3 a.m. to seek solace in a bottle or possibly a friend. Up with a headache like my head against a board, twice as cloudy as I'd been the night before. And I went in seeking clarity. I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the fountain. Then we go to the doctor, we go to the mountains, we look to the children. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. Closer I am to find. Closer I am to find. Yeah.
Because they all are like three chords. I had like my dad's guitars and my brother's guitars were like so big that my dad had like a beautiful, it was a Dreadnought Martin, like 1960, whatever.
Big old David Gilmour job. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, but like when you're a little kid to play it, you got to go like, you know, you got like, it's like, you got to really reach your hand up there. So thanks to them, I got a really early start on it.
Yeah, yeah. What was the first gig you went to? You know, that sort of first time you go and see like a show with like production and a thing and you're, you know, that show.
Well, my brother Matty, who I've been talking about, he was in a band with Tim Casher, who later would make the band Cursive, who's like a big band in our town. They were in a band all in high school and they would open for bands. So,
oh, what, like local support thing, right?
Okay. Yeah. And so to answer your question, I don't really know exactly, but definitely I watched them open for 311 before 311 moved to LA and pretended they were from LA, but they're actually from Omaha, which is amazing. In like a high school gymnasium.
Nice.
Chill.
If I ever didn't thank you, then just let me.
my very first performance was La Bamba, was a big Ritchie Valens biopic that came out when I was like 6 or 7 years old in the 80s. For whatever reason, I like loved it. And I was like, watch it all the time. And like, I was just like, so excited about it. As far as biopics go, it's like one of the best ones, I think, still to this day. And one of Ritchie Valens' other hits besides La Bamba is like, oh, Donna, oh, Donna.
Oh, Donna.
It's kind of like that sweet song. It's just like a kind of Motown-y, like, sweet song. But my first ever performance on stage was with my dad's band at, like, 6 or 7 years old. You know, they knew I could, like, sing, and I was, like, hamming it up for the audience, and, like, so they just gave me the microphone, and I was like, oh, Donna, and, like, doing, like, my little like sidesteps, like as if I was in the, you know, Temptations, and the, you know,
that's so cute, man.
Of course the crowd went wild,
and that was it. Once again, no turning back. You get that crowd reaction, that's it, you're hooked, you're done.
Yeah, that was it.
What's the Nas track we should play, because I know you love Nas? Jumping to hip hop,
I mean, Illmatic, Stillmatic. I mean, that was like the one thing, like, oh, you're like an outcast in high school or whatever.
Right.
And I was to a certain degree, and I was interested in different things. But the way that I could like relate to kind of like the bro culture of, like, if you can imagine like an all boys Catholic school in Omaha, Nebraska in like 1995.
Like, I have no reference point for that. I have no idea what that would be like. I have no idea.
Okay, well, it's scary, I'll tell you that. Especially if you're like, you know, I mean, I'm not gay, but like slightly, like, maybe possibly gay, like little kid, like, okay. All that aside, the one thing that I could relate to like these people on was like hip hop. Well, like Rage Against the Machine, or like hard, like, visceral, like, metal-y music. And I love Rage. I mean, I still love Rage to this day. I think they're one of the greatest bands ever. But point being, it's like, there wasn't a lot of common ground. Like, I couldn't talk to them about, like, the Smiths. Like, they would just be like, they would, like, want to kill me, like, immediately. That's the way it was. And so I ended up learning a lot about 90s hip hop. That was Nas. That was Jay-Z. That was Wu-Tang Clan. But like before they all got super famous, their first records. Like I remember when like Blueprint, like Jay-Z's record came out. I remember when all these things came out and how much like kids in Nebraska are obsessed with like this music, which is just a testament, well, A, to how good it is, and two, to how it can, like, transverse all, you know, whatever, races and genres and economic, whatever. Like, everybody agrees that those musicians are amazing. That's the point. And even, like, my older brother's friends and stuff who are already on to, like, obscure old records and like weird like indie rock and stuff, they still were like, everybody loved Wu-Tang. like when 36 Chambers came out, there was no one in my life that didn't like it. You know what I mean? It's like my brother that was like a elitist hipster kid and the like dirtbag frat boy guy from my high school, they both loved it. And I loved it too. And I think I was somewhere in the middle of that spectrum or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Smoking Joe Frazier, the Hellraiser, raising hell with the flavor. Terrorize the jam like troops in Pakistan. Swinging through your town like your neighborhood Spider-Man. So all tick-tock and keep ticking. Well, I get you flipping off the shit I'm kicking. The Lone Ranger, co-ed, danger. Deep in the dark with the art to rip the charts apart. The vandal, too hot to handle your battle. You're saying goodbye like Devin Campbell. Roughneck, Inspector Dex on the set. The rebel, I make more noise than heavy metal.
The way I make the crowd go wild. Sit back, relax, won't smile. Ray got it going on, pal. Call me the rap assassinator. Rhymes rugged and built like Schwarzenegger. And I'ma get mad deep like a threat. Blow up your project, then take all your assets. Cause I came to shake the frame in half with the thoughts that bomb like math. So if you wanna try to flip, yo, flip on the next man. Cause I grabbed the clip and hit you with 16 shots and more I got. Going to war with the melting pot.
It's the Method Man for short, Mr. Map. Move it on your left, ah. And set it off, get it off, let it off like a gat. I wanna break food, cop me back. Small change, they putting shame in the game. I take game and blow out the frame. And like fame, my style will live forever. Crossing over like they don't know no better. But I do, true, can I get a sue? Not respect due to the 1-6, ooh, I mean, oh. Yo, check out the flow like the Hudson or PCP. When I'm dusting, it's off because I'm hot like sauce. The smoke from the lyrical blood make me
What, grab my nut, get screwed. Ow. Here comes my Shaolin style. Truth, B-A-B-B-Y-U. To my crew with the
Come on, baby, baby, come on. Baby, come on, baby, baby, come on.
Yo, you best protect your neck.
First things first, man, you're with the worst. I'll be sticking pins in your head like a nurse. I'll attack any slack in this mat. Come fully packed with the fat brother stack. Shame on you when you step through. Two, the old dirty bastard, straight from the Brooklyn Zoo. And I'll be damned if I let any man come through my center. You enter the winter, straight up and down. That shit, that cam, you can't slam. Don't let me get fool on the man. The old dirty bastard is dirty and stinking. Ace on unique, rolling with the knife of the creeps. Rolling with a stash, ain't saying gas. Bite my style, I bite your motherfucker.
Can't lie, my style is wild, so book me. Not long is how long that this rhyme took me. Ejecting styles from my lethal weapon. My pen that rocks from here to Oregon. Here's more again, catch it like a psycho flashback. I love gats, rap was a gun, you wouldn't bust back. I come with shit, all types of shapes and sounds. And where I lounge is my stomping grounds. I give an order to my peeps across the water to go and snatch up props all around the border. And get far like a shooting star. Pursue our all, just live on the life of Pablo Escobar. Point blank as I kick the square biz. There it is, your fuck pros and it goes.
Yo, chill with the feedback block, we don't need that. It's 10 o'clock, where the f*** you see that? Feeling mad hostile, ran out apostle. Throwing like Christ when I speaks the gospel. Stroll with the holy robe, then attack the globe with the buckets. Style the ruckus, 10 times 10 men committing mad sin. Turn the other cheek and I'll break your f***ing chin. Slain boom bangs like African drums.
LB.
Coming around a mountain when I come. Crazy flamboyant for the rap enjoyment. My plan increased like black unemployment. Yeah, another one dare. Took a genius, take us the f*** out of here.
The woo is too slamming for these coke killer labels. So ain't had hit since I seen Aunt Mabel. Be doing all the sin like Cain did Abel. Now they money's getting stuck to the gum under the table. That's what you get when you misuse what I invent. Your empire falls and you lose every cent. But trying to blow up a scrub. Now that thought is just as bright as a 20 watt light bulb. Should've pumped it when I rocked it. So stingy, they got short arms and deep pockets. This goes on in some companies with majors that scared to death to pump these. First of all, who's your A&R? A mountain climber who plays an electric guitar. But he don't know the meaning of dope when he's looking for a suit and tie rap that's cleaner than a bar soap. And I'm the dirtiest thing in sight. Matter of fact, bring out the girls and let's have a mud fight.
You best protect your neck, you best protect your neck, you best protect your neck, you best protect your neck.
There are a few sibling rivalries that have gripped us quite like that of Liam and Noel Gallagher.
He had a row with me, so we had a fight, and that was it. And then I trashed the place, yeah.
The rise and fall of Oasis, a band committed to the rock and roll dream.
I mean, we're not angels, but we're not as bad as people make out.
Join me, Steve Lamacq.
And me, Joe Wiley, as we not only celebrate the music that Oasis made, but also delve into the complex and unruly rivalry.
There's only so many olive branches you can give someone, you know what I mean? But that's life.
The rise and fall of Oasis.
Listen now on BBC Sounds.
Matt Everett's The First Time with Conor Oberst.
Six.
Music, music, music.
Come by when you get off work. I'll be sitting around doing nothing. Let's wait till the sun goes down. Then we'll drive off deep into the night. Don't care where we're going, as long as I'm going with you. The summer swells in us. With the heat comes a new kind of wanting. Cool nights never. Play around, wait for something to happen. When it's three lonely figures, a bedroom, a basement, she's scared. Which one is sleeping and which one is lying awake? Yeah, which one is sleeping and which one is lying about it? Drags on and on. Movie nights that never end. We can hang out all night long. Lay in bed and talk to a good friend. Cause we only get older. We'll probably forget what it's like. The university. Quiet today. Didn't clean, we just talked in the bathroom. The girl always gets in the way. Ruined friendships, but others replace them. These opinions are poison. I'm drinking them all of my life. Could never replace you. Could never forget what it's like. Cigarettes and my closest friends. Tell myself that I have to remember this. Remember this. Tell myself that I've got to remember.
So we're talking a lot about firsts, so we should probably talk about the first Bright Eyes album. Collection of songs written and recorded in 1995-97. What do you remember about actually putting that one down?
The first Bright Eyes record was kind of an afterthought because I had a band called Commander Venus. Terrible name, but...
It is a terrible name.
But the thing is...
No, but names have to be terrible at the start. Early band names have to be terrible. It's the law.
Matt, in my defense, I will say that I was 13, maybe 14 years old, and we didn't have time. We got hired for one show at like a pool party. They were having a concert at a pool like in the summer, and I had been playing with Tim Kasher, who played with my older brother, who's the main songwriter of Cursive and The Good Life and et cetera, et cetera. Still to this day, an amazing songwriter. But I guess I'm 14 and like Tim's like 19 or something at this point. And he's playing with me because I'm my brother's little brother, and I've known him since I was like 5 years old. I remember he was the first person that like told me what a distortion pedal did. He's like, just push this pedal. he's like, if you wanted to get louder. And I was like, really? I was like, first time I did it, I remember being like, wow, that feels good. Like, wow.
I'm gonna do that forever.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, I mean, yeah, long story long is just, I mean, I've had a strange life. I signed my first real record contract at like age 14. I had to get my parents to like sign it. And at the same time, we were working on our record label, which was based, you know, we loved like Merge and Matador and Sub Pop. And like, we loved like indie labels. And so like with Saddle Creek, we were trying to like emulate that, but we didn't know what we were doing. We were like idiots. We were like kids from Nebraska. Like, we had no clue. You know, we were just proverbially throwing the spaghetti at the wall and like seeing what sticks, and some stuff stuck and some didn't. Yeah.
I'm Wide Awake It's Morning and Digital Ash 2005. Those were maybe the kind of first records that really brought you to the attention of kind of a lot more people. How did you cope with that? It's a funny thing, like, if you wanted to be in a band that's getting attention since you were like 7, and all of a sudden it starts happening, how was that for you?
Well, it was fun and terrifying at the same time. I mean, it was fun because all of a sudden, like, people actually came to our shows, which was cool. Also, like, my grandpa, he died a couple of years ago, but he was like, don't cry. He was 99 years old. He lived a great life. Anyway, he was kind of a curmudgeon-y old Republican. I mean, he was a sweet man in a lot of ways, but he's like an old Midwestern guy who had zero idea of what I was doing as a teenager. And like, it took me like getting on like the David Letterman show for him to even understand that like what I was doing was like semi important. You know what I mean? And so that was kind of like our dynamic, like our whole, like for the rest of his life. But that's true about this place. I mean, I'm sitting right here in Omaha right now. It's like, people, they need to be validated by other people to like feel like they have importance. I do think that is a true sentiment in America, which is a lot of people feel like anything that's like artistic or construed as like elitism or like highfalutin, like artistry, is discarded because it means you're a snob and like whatever. And that is a big part of American culture. And I am like the very textbook case from my hometown of like, oh, that kid's like, he watches like old black and white movies. He must be like sick in the head, you know, like, or whatever. You know, if you're from the Midwest, you get it. Like in America, because in some ways they're the most polite, plain spoken, nice people, but they're also like mad judgmental. And if you're a kid with quote unquote weird, like artistic tendencies, it doesn't go over well.
First with your hands, then with your mouth, a downpour of sweat, damp cotton. on clouds. I was a fool, you were my friend. We made it happen. You took off your clothes, left on the light. You stood there so brave, you used to be shy. Each feature improved, each movement refined. In eyes like a showroom. Now the spreading out the blankets on the beach. Well, that weatherman's alive. He said it'd be raining. But it's clear and blue as far as I can see. Left by the lamp right next to the bed. On a cartoon cat pad, she scratched with a pen. Everything is as it's always been. This never happened. Don't take it too bad, it's nothing you did. Just once something dies, you can't make it live. You're a beautiful boy, you're a sweet little kid. But I'm a woman. So I lay back down, wrap myself up in the sheet. And I must have looked like a ghost, cause something frightened me.
So when you started to kind of get like a reputation, started to get coverage, did you feel a lot of pushback then from your...
I felt validation. That's what I'm saying. Like, it was the
right.
First, like when I played on David Letterman and I played on all those like late night shows like a million times in my life now. But the very first time, I think it was 2003, we played David Letterman and it was like all of a sudden people that didn't care about like me or like my bands or my friends' bands. And we were doing something like from the ground up. We made our own label. We made ourselves successful. Like no one, It was basically like Bright Eyes, Cursive, and The Faint were like the three like main bands. I sat in my friend Rob, who was kind of like the head of the label or whatever. I sat in his apartment and I like stuffed Faint records into packages to send them to people for like 8 hours at a time. Because I love The Faint for one, but also it was just like, that's what you did. Those are your friends. Yeah. And like, No one even questioned it. It was just like, yeah, everyone's got to stuff the packages. You know, we couldn't hire anyone. We didn't have any money. It was just like, all right.
I'm going to ask you about First Day of My Life because it's one of those songs that if someone hears it for the first time, it always has an impact on people if they never heard it before, every time. And it's kind of like the sort of key to the door of a little kind of club when you hear that song for the first time. You're like, oh, all right, okay, can we go in here? Yeah, it's all waiting for you on the other side of this door. That song's that door. So, I mean, I love it. It's a beautiful song. It must be nice having one of those songs.
In total truth, that song, and I think that most songs, at least if you're not like living in a world of like super scientific structured, like that's right, a pop song, like not just for me, but like for, I think most artists, like if they have a big song, it's a fluke.
This is the first day of my life. Where I was born, right in the doorway. I went out in the rain, suddenly everything changed. They're spreading blankets on the beach. Yours is the first face that I saw. I think I was blind before I met you. And I don't know where I am, I don't know where I've been, but I know where I want to go. And so I thought I'd let you know. Yeah, these things take forever, I especially am slow. But I realized that I need you, and I wondered if I could come home.
drove all night just to meet me in the morning. And I thought it was strange, you said everything changed. You felt as if you'd just woke up, and you said, this is the first day of my life. I'm glad I didn't die before I met you. But now I don't care, I could go anywhere with you, and I'd probably be happy. So if you wanna be with me, if these things there's no telling, we just have to wait and see. But I'd rather be working for a paycheck than waiting to win the lottery. Besides, maybe this time it's different. I mean, I really think you like me.
And that is completely how that song was. And that song's about, like, Maria Taylor, who's, like, great artist, Azur Ray, blah, blah, blah. She was my girlfriend at the time in, like, 2002 or something. And she's a great songwriter, great musician. And that's just a song. It's a true story. Like, she drove all night to come pick me up at my brother's house. And it was just some, like, sweet love song. I wrote it. I was just like, this is cheesy. This maybe kind of sucks. I don't know. And actually, my friend Tim Casher, who's the principal songwriter of, like, Cursive and The Good Life and those bands, it was, like, one of my best, oldest friends. I remember him telling me, which blew my mind at the time. He was like, yo, that's like the best song you've ever written. And he's not a guy that would say that. And he's also not a guy that would like that song, you know? I was like, really? And this is like right before it came out. This is like, immediately. And I was like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, that's your best song you've written. You know, I'd written a lot of songs. And I was like, I kind of felt simultaneously like super excited because I respect him as a songwriter, but also like kind of insulted because I was like, what about all these other songs I've been writing that are great? I mean, I think that is interesting and strange how I think, like, for me and for other friends of mine who are in popular, like, indie rock or subculture stuff, it's like when they have a hit, they didn't make it with the intention of having a hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a happy accident.
When the Bright Eyes guys kind of do something, when they get together, I think you refer to you guys as like neurotic perfectionists. But you, like, the way you talk about when, as opposed to the solo stuff or different projects, when the Bright Eyes things happen, it's got a specialness to it.
Yeah. I am in a band with like two psychotic geniuses. Nate Walcott and like Michael Mogus, they're so out of their minds. I always like make a joke of it. I'm like, if I am the most normal guy in Bright Eyes, like that's like saying something like right there. Like, I'm the most normal guy in Bright Eyes. They'll probably argue with you if you ever talk to them, but like they're both geniuses. Nate, he does all the orchestration. He's a composer. He's like, every time we do a thing, like go to like Capitol Studios in LA and bring in like a 40-piece orchestra, it's like he's written all the parts and he's on top of it. And then Michael is, he can play any stringed instrument, like, you know, mandolin, banjo, guitar, pedal steel, whatever. He can play anything perfectly, better than anyone. And then he's also like an incredible producer. And so I feel like his other instrument in terms of our band is the studio itself and like the way we always like try to use like delays and different effects to like hopefully like elevate the song. Like some of it's my ideas, but that's Michael's ability. I can just say like, I wanted to sound like, you remember the time when the ice broke on the ice skating rink and it sounded crazy? Can you just make it like that? And he'll do it somehow with his like little boxes and his little knobs. I could never do that. Well, one, I would never have the patience and I don't have the ear or ability to do it. So I'm very lucky to be in a band with two guys that are just very talented in different ways. And for me, it's like, you know, I bring the words and like the basic like melodies, but I'm basically like writing the same folk song like over and over again, you know. And we just try to make believe that it's different than before, but...
Tell me about Better Oblivion Community Center. Tell me about people's reaction when they first heard about that, because that's like, that hit quite hard with people, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that was like kind of a, I keep using the word like fluke, but it was definitely not like planned out. I met Phoebe because she started working with this guy, Darren Harmon, who still to this day is Mogus's manager as a producer, and he used to work with Rilo Kiley, like one of our other friends' bands. Anyway, I heard her songs and I met her, played a show with her in like, I guess 2016. A few months later, she came to mix her first record, Stranger in the Alps, with Michael up the hill. Our houses are like connected. Like I'm pointing that way because I can see it from right here. But
for those on the radio, he's pointing across there.
Yeah, but that's the studio up there. And she came and mixed the record with Mike, and I like sang on things, and then we went on tours together. Blah blah blah. Eventually we like fell in love and we spent 4 years of our lives like together, and like we survived like the pandemic, like living in LA together and blah, 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 blah. But she is amazing. And we made that band because like when you're hanging out with like your best friend and they happen to be an amazing songwriter and singer, and you're both musicians, you end up making music together. So that's like how that record came about, and it'll probably never happen again, but it happened in one moment in time, and that's great.
And the final thing, what song should we play out on? You get to pick the final song. We've picked all these firsts. You get to pick the last. It can be anything. It could be something of yours, something you heard this morning, something of someone else's. Anything you want, we can play out on any track you want. Where should we finish?
Recently, even though I told myself I would never do it again, I started another new record label. It's called Million Stars. We only have one band so far, and it's the Fleece Brothers. And I guess maybe we should play Flowers by the Roadside. That's on their new record. It's beautiful.
Then that's the song we're going to go out on. Cool. Thank you, mate. It's been really lovely speaking to you.
It's great to talk to you, my fan.
Fleece Brothers, Flowers by the Roadside. The final choice of my guest on the first time today, Conor Oberst. And that is the end of this show. I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode of The First Time, where my guest will be the brilliant Lucy Rose. And of course, you can listen back to previous First Time shows from this series, including my conversations with Boy George, Bernard Butler, Isabel Campbell and Kareen Bailey-Ray. Just go to BBC Sounds. Until tomorrow, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.